Welcome back to the roundtable, divorce, custody, adoption, reproductive technology, marriage equality, and domestic violence. These are issues that touch all of our personal lives in some way or another and make news headlines every single day. In her new book, Keeping It Civil, The Case of the Prenup and the Porsche and Other True Accounts from the Files of a Family Lawyer, Margaret Klaw gives us insights into these hot-button issues in a new way, and we welcome her to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us.
To be with you.
So it is, it's a delight to have you with us. As I should mention, you are a founding partner of Berner Klaw & Watson, a family law firm in Philadelphia, and have been recognized as a super lawyer for the past 5 years. What makes you a super lawyer, do you think?
I'm not sure. it's a peer review process.
When it came to telling these stories, what is the ultimate story that you wanted to tell? The point that you wanted the takeaway to be for people who read the book?
I think there's a couple of takeaways. I mean, one thing is that I know that what the world that I work in and that other family lawyers work in is incredibly rich and interesting because it involves, as you said in your intro, you know, the issue, these hot button issues, and the things that matter most to us, our intimate relationships, our kids, our families, and I know that this world is really interesting, and I've always loved reading about what other people do, and you know, when they have like a rich work life. I mean, I've always loved reading the doctors who write about being doctors, and other sort of insight into a world you don't know. And so, one of my goals was to try to shed some light on this world because I think it is just fascinating, and I know the material is fascinating to everybody because people talk about these issues all the time. So that's one goal, and the other is to really, I think, entertain and educate people about the complexity of family law, and just to give insight into a process that, you know, people who are going through a divorce or a family law issue often have real, I think, blinders on because they're so focused on their own situation, but to try to open that up and see the nuance and the complexity. What's the judge thinking? What's going on between the lawyers? What's going on between the lawyer and the client? And how is the law intersecting with these emotional issues? I just wanted to give insight and hopefully entertain. It is not an academic book. It's
right,
meant to be engaging.
And anecdotal. You're telling a lot of stories about people and what they go through. You do make the point in the book that we talk a lot about marriage equality, but we also need to talk about divorce equality.
Yeah, well, there's this terrible situation right now, which is that people who got married in a same-sex couple who gets married in a state that permits them to get married, let's use New York as an example because I practice in Philadelphia, so you know, Philadelphia does not permit same-sex marriage. I mean, Pennsylvania does not permit same-sex marriage. So a couple in Philly goes up to New York for the weekend, has a big wedding, you know, but they live in Philly, they come back. And, you know, guess what? Gay people want to get divorced just like straight people. You know, not all their marriages work out either. So a couple years later, the marriage isn't working out. They want to get divorced. They can't get divorced in Pennsylvania, which is where they reside. And every state has a residency requirement for divorce. They can't go to New York and file a divorce when they don't live there. And you could see why. I mean, states don't really want people using their court systems for complex, potentially like time-consuming litigation that aren't residents of their state. So they're stuck. They're in limbo. They can't get divorced, and they can't, not only can they not get unmarried, which is obviously the goal of divorce ultimately, but they also, the economic remedies that are available in divorce, you know, sharing of property, potentially support between the spouses of some sort, they can't access those. I mean, it's really, it's a mess. And I think as same-sex marriage is going to, I think it's safe to say that it is going to be universal in this country at some point, and it's just a question of when. But right now, there's this patchwork that's very difficult to navigate.
One of the points also that you make in regards to safe sex, same-sex couples, which I think is a really interesting point of how they are creating new family structures. And when it comes to our definition of family, that definition is being expanded and changed because of these new structures.
Absolutely. And family law is a really dynamic area of the law, and that's because, as you say, the definition of what is a family has radically changed in the last 30 years, I'd say. I mean, there is recognition, even in states where marriage isn't permitted, there is legal recognition of same-sex relationships in some different contexts and same-sex couples raising children together, and there's also become a recognition of the importance of people who are not biological or adoptive parents, the importance of those adults to children that may not fit in that box, a grandparent who's raising a child, a relative who's not a grandparent, or a neighbor who's raising a child. The law is really expanding to sort of acknowledge and protect those relationships, and then there is the reproductive technology scenarios where different components of parenthood are getting spread out among multiple people. You have an egg donor, you have a sperm donor, you have a gestational carrier. That's a woman who essentially rents her uterus to nurture a baby to term. So what is she? Is she a mother? She has no genetic connection to the child. I mean, it's dizzying how fast this is changing. And that sounds like maybe an extreme example. It's not that extreme, but it's not that common either. But there are many gay couples raising children with another person was involved in the creation of the child, and that person may be also involved in the child's life. And that, like a sperm donor, a known sperm donor, a lesbian couple uses someone that they know to donate the sperm, and it's not a sperm bank, and the intention is that man is going to have a relationship with the child, but not really as a father, because the two women are going to be the parents. So that's a new family structure, and the law is really struggling to keep up with the culture.
You say that obviously family lawyers know a lot more about what's going on behind closed doors than most of us do. Because you know of all of these, there's a lot of scenarios, aren't there? A lot of different things that can go around and figure out how the law is fair and applies to those particular scenarios of whether it comes up about personal finances or sexual indiscretions or mental health or substance abuse or whatever the issue is, and you have to be ready for that.
You do have to be ready for that. And I have to say that's one of the reasons I love practicing family law is somebody comes into my office and in like 10 minutes I know stuff about them that maybe their brother or sister doesn't know. Because people, they're going through something difficult and they need to a lawyer's assistance, and they need to tell me, I mean, I need to know, how much do you earn? How much does your spouse earn? How much debt do you have? How much is in your bank accounts? But people don't talk about that stuff. They may talk about the sexual indiscretions. I think more likely they're talking about that to somebody than that they're talking about their debt or their spending habits or their what's in their 401k. I mean, really, it's still very taboo to talk about money. And so they kind of unload all that on a divorce lawyer because they need to. I need to know that stuff. And but I also, it's not just that information which creates sort of an intimate relationship in a way, but it's also the fact that people are usually in a state of some kind of crisis and they're very raw, and it creates a real immediacy to the lawyer-client relationship. It's, there are so many areas of law that, and I hope I'm not offending lawyers out there, but there's so many areas of law that are just so dull seeming to me. And, I love family law because I'm dealing with, just stuff that we all really care about, or at least I really care about, you know, families and relationships and children. And I learn about that stuff from someone that I might never meet. And if I did meet them, I might know them for years and not know these things about them, you know, in another context. So I love that.
And of course, family law indicates in many cases that we're also talking about children, and children are involved. And that is a very, that's obviously very complex. And it's also something that, I mean, some of these stories are harrowing.
Yeah, I mean, that's the most difficult area of family law for sure, by far, is dealing with child custody cases and child custody disputes, especially when there's something really bad being alleged by one of the parents, you know, abuse, sexual abuse, physical abuse, or, you know, you have a parent that is maybe a substance abuser, you know, it's in some way really dysfunctional. And those are tough cases. And it's also hard dealing with the courts because the standard of what's in the best interest of the child, which is what every state has essentially that standard for making determinations about custody, it is very subjective. Even if there's a long list of factors the court has to consider, I think there's no way that you can avoid the fact that a judge has to look somewhat to their own experience, own life experiences, in figuring that out. And, you know, parenting practices change, and judges are of different generations than the litigants in their courtroom usually. And, you know, I mean, maybe one parent thinks co-sleeping, that the fact the other parent sleeps with children that are, you know, older, which a lot of families do now, you know, there's a whole lot of literature about it. The one parent might think that's really inappropriate, and the judge might agree with them. And then what do I do as a lawyer when I think it's fine myself, but my client wants to present that to the judge as something bad, and I think if I think the judge is going to think it's bad, I got to present that information, you know?
Yeah.
But it's very complicated. Yeah, it's an interesting area, but I find custody cases to be the toughest ones.
Help me out with the term the good divorce.
You think it's an oxymoron?
Well, I don't. You know, any way you look at it, you know, you had hoped for one thing and another thing turned out. So it's not the gold standard of what you were originally looking for.
What you wanted, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, so the concept of the good divorce is that there is such a thing that not that it's what you expected, but that divorce can be, I would say, a reconfiguration of a family as opposed to, like, breaking a family, and that it's essentially like a life cycle event. It's not one that is inevitable, not like a birthday, but one that happens with great frequency, so it's not that unexpected, and that we should treat it as a sad but workable problem that both people need to figure out. I mean, I would say that's sort of the framework of what people are talking about when they talk about the good divorce, and that there's a emphasis on preserving a relationship with the person you're getting divorced from, which, I mean, if you don't have any children, anyone cares that much about that. But when there's children involved, I think because now there's so much more expectation and culturally changes about parenting that both people expect in most divorces now that both parents are going to be really involved in day-to-day parenting. No matter what the particular schedule is, it's going to be some kind of sharing of custodial time, of parenting time. And if you know, to do that, you really need to have a relationship with the other person, like a working relationship. I think much more than in the kind of old model where, you know, mom had the kids and dad saw them every other weekend for, you know, Saturday night and bought them pizza and, you know, sent them back to mom. Like, that's not the norm anymore at all. And those parents probably didn't have to communicate that much about their kids. The parents that are doing the day-to-day, you know, really do. And so I think that is part of the impetus for the good divorce, too, that we have to figure out a way to move forward as a family that is now structured differently. And that what that often entails is people trying hard to work out agreements themselves, either, you know, with the help of professionals like mediators or lawyers that are helping them negotiate or whatever, but not relying on courts, trying to stay away from them, that adversarial model.
Margaret Quaz, the author of the book Keeping It Civil. It is published by Algonquin. Margaret, thank you very much for spending time and sharing with us this morning. A fascinating conversation. I appreciate you being with us.
Thanks so much. My pleasure, Joe.
Have a great weekend. Thank you. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.